sessions, and let's talk a bit about models in planting a church. Let's take a look at steps in planting a church, thresholds to cross as you plant a church, and then stages that church plants go through. So first, several models to look at as you think of planting a church. And I like to use the image of the Continental Divide as we think about this. The Continental Divide is out in the Rockies, and if a drop of rain falls just to the west of the Continental Divide, then the water will flow out to the Pacific Ocean. If it falls to the east of that mountain peak, it flows down into the Gulf of Mexico and then into the Atlantic Ocean. So just a few feet, one way or the other, can make a difference where that drop of water is going to end up, in which ocean it's going to end up. And so the model that you have in your head about what you want to accomplish with this church plant is going to have a great deal to do with not only the kind of church you end up having, but how you go about getting there and how you recruit for doing the church plant. And so I think this is very, very important for you as a church to think about as you consider planting another church. What is your aim? What is God putting in your heart about how to plant another church? What kind of church to plant? So the first one that I have, I call the congregational swarm. The congregational swarm. Swarm comes from the beekeepers, right? So the bees, as the bees, number of bees grow in the hive, at some point, there's so many of them, the queen gives the signal, and they swarm. A new queen arises, I'm not sure how that happens, and there's a swarm of bees, and they go off, and they start another community. So the swarm model is friendly, and it's intentional. And so what we have here is the church, maybe because the church is full, instead of building a new building, they send out 6, 8, 10 families, a church in the largest church in the world in South Korea. They just send out like 5,000 at a time, that's all. Well, they have 750,000, at least years ago they did. I don't know what they have now, the world's largest church in South Korea. But Mennonites really don't get into sending out that many at a time. All right, so, but we do send out, and this has been typical for us over the years, of sending out 6, 8, 10, 20 families, households, and singles to go and start another church. Now, each model has its advantages. Each model has its challenges. The advantages here with this model, hopefully there's a common vision. They're from the same church. They have natural friendship links already formed. Hopefully they have good relationships with each other. And there's numerical strength. From the very first Sunday that they show up, in that new community, that new neighborhood, there's 50, 30, 75 people. They gather together and they do church. And when they invite people, neighbors, they say, come to our church. And people show up, and yes, it looks like a church, maybe a little small, but it's a church. And they can sing and they can preach. They have a preacher and so on. And so it has strength to it. Now, the shadow side of the congregational swarm is that it may be all people from the same kind of background. It could be cliquish. It doesn't have to be. But a big thing is they may not need newcomers. They hope people from the neighborhood will come, but if they don't, we can still be a church anyway because there's enough of us to be church. And as the children grow up and they marry and hopefully they stay there, the church continues to grow, whether locals are won to Christ or not. There may also be some cultural differences between the church plant, the church that's being planted, and the community around them. For example, and I think you can understand that here, those of you who are from Swiss, German, Dutch background, if you go to certain parts of Tennessee, you're in redneck country, and you don't pack a pistol or whatever it is they pack, and you don't carry a grudge maybe for two generations, maybe just one, and so and on it goes, right? Same color, a little different accent, same country, different cultures. Okay, And another challenge with this group is you tend to attract people who are like you. Your cousin, your brother, an uncle, an aunt, someone who wants to get in on the fun of a new church being started. There's good things happening. It's a new community. Some people are attracted to the new, and so they come and join you in your church. But just remember, the more of us, the less of them. I'm thinking in terms of cultural differences. For example, if there are several Hispanic believers that get together and they want to start a church, they want to attract people from their neighborhood that are not Hispanics, or if they are Hispanics, the larger this Hispanic church grows, the less likely it becomes to attract non-Hispanics. It's just the way it is. So, number two, similar, a little different, is cooperative swarm. Again, we're talking about the swarm model, but here it's different in that it's a conjoint project of maybe two or more congregations that are going to cooperate together in planting another church and send some out from each of the churches to participate in that church plant. Advantages, again, numerical strength, feels like church, sounds like church on a Sunday morning, looks like church, a little more diversity because you come from different churches, church backgrounds, and different ways of doing things. Disadvantage, though, do you have a common vision? And still, the other one is, you don't really need locals to show up and be part of the church because you can still do church anyway. It's good if they come, but if they don't, we still have us. And so that is going to diminish the potential for local church growth from among the unchurched, unsaved people. Number three, I call it congregational church planters or the start from scratch model. And you ladies know what that is. Instead of buying a cake mix to make a cake, you just gather all of your ingredients, you put them together, and out comes this marvelous creation. And so it's a cake that was baked from scratch. And so what I mean by this is that one, two, or three couples and singles from a church are sent out to plant another church. They are commissioned, they're prayed for, they're sent out, they're encouraged, on occasion they're visited, and so on. But those one, two, three couples and singles are responsible to start a new church. The advantages of this model. Well, the people you send out, you've had a chance to get to know and test them in advance. And you can see if they've already been trying to reach out before they go. And so you don't have to guess so much on that. They can be sent somewhere to receive some training in church planting and evangelism and so on. They're more mobile and flexible. Not so many people have to stop their jobs to move across the state or across the county or whatever it is. And so you're not disrupting the lives of so many people. And they know that in their church plant, they need to win local people. Because if they don't, this church is not going to grow. And so as local people begin to visit, they're put to work because they're needed. And when people feel needed, they feel ownership. And the other thing is, these one, two, or three couples, they have more time and space in their calendar and in their relationship network to include neighbors and unchurched people because they don't have as many reunions to go to and not so many expectations for birthday parties and graduation parties and on it goes that we need to do to keep our relationships going in a local church, right? So they make conscious decisions not to go to all of those events back in the home church sending community because, well, when it's Christmas, we ought to be here to celebrate Christmas with the locals. And when it's Thanksgiving, we ought to do something locally with our neighbors to celebrate Thanksgiving. So we'll go and be with our family on other occasions. So those are some of the advantages of the start-from-scratch model. There are challenges with this model. And by the way, this is my preferred model. If you intend for the church plant to be composed primarily of people from non-Anabaptist background. Now, the disadvantages. So picture you and Carl's moved to Community X, and you're all there are. And so you begin reaching out to your neighbors, and your neighbor says, hey, I like you good people, you know, and where do you go to church? And let's suppose you lived at 637 Magnolia Way. Okay. And so they say, well, where's your church? And you said 637 Magnolia Way. Okay. So they plug it into their GPS on Sunday morning. They're going to come, and they show up, and they say, oh, yeah, good morning. Welcome. Carl, where's your church? Well, you're here. Welcome. They come in, and they say, well, where's the church? Well, we're it. You're all? Well, yeah, this and this other couple, too. And you. Welcome. And so there are some people that are going to be a little bit uneasy. Is this a real church? Or is this a fly-by-night cult? Here today, gone tomorrow. If I join up with this group, are they going to pull up someday and leave me here, and I'll be the fool of all of my relatives? So there's some people like that. So that's a challenge there. The other thing is, you really battle loneliness, and discouragement becomes a huge challenge. And so in that first season, you are evangelizing, and that's what you do. There's almost no pastoral care work because there's nobody to pastor. It's just you. And so you have to face your fear of evangelism right square head on and wrestle it down to the ground and work through it and actually befriend local people and include them in your lives week by week. There's also the need here for perseverance. How long it will take, nobody can tell you. How long will it be? And also, at times, there's the challenge for continuity. What if one of the couples experiences in one of their elder parents, a new health challenge requiring elder care? What's going to happen? And if the one couple quits and leaves, what does that do to the church plant? It could fold up. We know of one couple that was invited by another couple to plant a church somewhere in the south, I won't say where, and after they went through all the work to buy a house and to locate there and to get started, and then the other couple informed them, we are not going to continue, and we're not going to continue with the Anabaptist church. And there they're left high and dry. So that's a challenge to this approach. However, the advantage is this approach really sends a strong signal to the locals that you are befriending. We want you, we need you, we have time for you. We are here for you, okay? But it takes some internal fortitude, and it takes the willingness to do a lot of evangelism in befriending of local people. Now, letter D is another model. It's called relocated Mennonites. Relocated Mennonites means you are driving across the country, trying to discern God's will about where to start another church, and you happen to see on the mailbox, Bontrager. And you say, Bontrager. Oh, and over here it says Yoder. Ah, I'll bet they're what? Mennonites. Okay. Now, for those of you who are not Mennonite background, you have to kind of put up with an in-house joke here. So sorry about that. But at any rate, there are advantages here. These people may have a similar background and values to you. They may also have been praying for God to send some co-workers to join in them with them. On the other hand, don't assume anything. They may be running away from a bishop somewhere and some unresolved problems. And they brought them along with them, but they don't think so. They may not have the same vision as you. They might like in the general scheme of things for a church to be started, but you may not be on the same page in terms of beliefs and values and how to be church. So don't assume anything. They may hijack your vision. They may bring with them the unresolved issues from the past. On the other hand, they may be the advance guard that the Lord sent and that He wants you to join up with. Just don't assume anything. Explore, probe, find out. And then there are still other models. This number five seems to be the preferred model within Anabaptist churches. It's called the church split model. Have you heard of that model? Okay, so years ago in the National Geographic, there was an article about the Amish. And so whatever I say in this little story about the Amish is true of all the rest of the Menno groups. Anyway, the interviewer from National Geographic asked them, So why is it that there are so many splits among the Mennonites and Amish? And he says, well, I always did say it takes good wood to split. That was in the National Geographic. Well, at any rate, it's just a story. Okay, so God does use church splits to get more churches started. I'm not saying it's his preferred model, but he does use them. However, before you embark on one of these projects, if there is bitterness and resentment, it won't prosper. Because you're always going to be comparing yourself back with them and casting them in a negative light. And God can't bless that. So be very careful about that. And there are other ways too. Some churches have small groups. A small group that has to travel a long ways to come to the church could become a church plant. Some churches are growing big enough they can have another site where the church leaders in the mother church are actually serving that church as well. Sunday schools, kids ministries, and so on can all become church plants. Now, some steps in planting churches. So, number one, I start out with fasting and prayer. Pray and fast. And you see that in Acts 13, where they were fasting and praying. And you don't do it only at the beginning, you do it throughout. Because there's something about fasting along with prayer that just, I don't know for sure how to explain it. It doesn't force God's hand. But one thing it does do, it makes it makes you and me more sensitive to what the Lord wants to do. And it grows our faith to believe him for what he has promised. Number two, I would suggest get acquainted with the pastors and the churches in the target area. Go and visit those churches, ask questions, observe, meet with the pastors, ask for some uninterrupted time to ask about their church, their ministry, the history of the church, the history of the community. What do they see are unmet needs in the neighborhood, and so on. And ask for prayer requests and pray for him and let him know what you're up to. We are considering the area for planting a church, or if you've already chosen. But we want you to know we are not here to take people out of your church. And if somebody starts visiting our church and they're from your church, we're going to call you up and ask you what's going on. We are not in competition with you. We are here primarily to find and to win lost people to Christ. And then number three, move to the target area so that you can live there instead of commuting there, so people can watch you and see if you're the real deal, and so that you're available when they have needs, and so that you can go to them when you have needs. When you need your car to be jumped on a cold morning, if you get those in Tennessee, go ask your neighbor who's not churched if he could come and help you start your car, and so forth. Number three, learn about the community, meet community leaders, attend a community group. In our neighborhood, there was a lady who had organized a block association, and once a month, we would meet in the basement of the Methodist church, and people would come to share their complaints and the local gossip and so on, and they would bring the firefighters in to talk to us. One time, the mayor came, too. But it's a way of getting to meet people in a non-religious situation in which you get acquainted with the people. Number five, do a survey of community needs. Early on in our neighborhood, we just went door to door and we asked, we're new in the neighborhood, and we just like to find out, we're here to plant a church, and we'd like to learn how we can best serve our community. What do you think are the two greatest needs in our neighborhood? And over, we heard two things. One is, we need more police protection. Well, we couldn't do much about that, right? The other was, we need more positive, planned, supervised activities for children. And that's how we got our children's ministry started that way. And then as you listen to people, you are praying and asking God for direction, for his strategy for reaching out to this community in which he has planted you. And then number six, here's a reference to my farm background. Begin to farm the area through repeated contacts at homes, beginning closest to your home and radiating outward. Remember Acts 1:8? and you shall be witnesses unto me both in, what was the first place? Jerusalem, and then in Judea and Samaria, and then to the uttermost parts of the earth. So Jerusalem, that's right where they were, even though they weren't from there. Start right where you are. Judea, that's the province around the city. Samaria, that was the next province up to the north. It's like what we say the other side of the tracks, because they were the mixed blood people, the Gentile, Jewish, and the different kind of religion. And then from there, the uttermost parts of the earth. So start right where you are and keep working outward. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you have been visited by Jehovah's Witnesses going out and doing their witnessing thing? Raise your hands and look around. You're allowed to look around, okay? All right. How many of you have been visited by Mormons? Raise your hands. A few, but fewer. How many of you have been visited by Mennonites doing that? Look around. Please look around. All right? So here you have an illustration of a group who has a false gospel, but which mobilizes its people. And then you have an illustration of a group which I believe has a true gospel, but doesn't mobilize its people. All right? Now, of those Jehovah's Witnesses who came to visit you, many of you raised your hands, the vast majority of you, how many of them did you know? How many of you knew the people who came to visit you? Raise your hands. Look around. All right. I've never had a Jehovah's Witness neighbor come to visit me. In fact, when I've tried to get their addresses, they don't want to give it to me. In fact, one guy, I squeezed him hard enough that finally he gave me his name and address. I said, you got mine, now you give me yours. Well, he says, my name's Walker. Where do you live? 626 Crescent Avenue. Crescent is about 6 blocks from our house. So one day thereafter, I went and looked to see what his house looked like. And I started looking at the numbers of the houses, 620, 622, 624, 628. There was no 626. Okay, so start right with those closest to you. You say, well, that's scary. It is, of course. But then people can watch you and get to know you, and you can get to know them, and you can serve them. So you say, well, how do you do that? If you want a real low-key way of doing it, the sooner you get at this, the better. Because the newer you are in the community, the better it makes sense. You just go, and you go to the next door. Hi, my name is Alan, and we just moved in next door. We're new in the neighborhood. And we moved here because we would like to start a church. And we want to get to know our neighbors so that we can serve them. And remember, a neighbor nearby is always worth more than a brother far away. So here we are. Here's our phone number. If there's any way we can serve you, please let us know. By the way, we believe in praying for people. Is there anything of particular concern to you for which we can pray? And then if they give you something, you pray for them and say, no, everything's good. Everything's good, good. Just pray for the world. Say, okay, well, let's do that. And you pray for the world, but you pray for them, for God's blessing on them. Give them your phone number. Tell them, let me know if we can ever be of service. Oh, by the way, here is something for you to read. And I leave with them a just for you. Next month, we get the next just for you. Do the same thing over again. If people aren't at home, we just write on the back, your new neighbors, Alan and Carolyn, we stop by to see you. Hope you're well. Stick it in the handle of the door, in the crack or something where they can find it and welcome them home. Sooner or later, I'm telling you, you will get to know your neighbors, and of course, they'll know that you're a Christian because you've told them so, and you will sooner or later find somebody who's open to friendship that you can begin to develop until it becomes regular Bible reading and prayer in their homes. Another simple way is to take that questionnaire on the back table, neighborhood questionnaire, community questionnaire. You can go like this, hi. My name is Monica. Sorry to be picking on you all, okay? But we just moved into town, and we'd like to get to know our neighbors. And one way we have to do that is with a simple questionnaire with a few simple questions. If you don't mind, we'll just ask you if you could help me. And you stand where they can see it, and you begin to go through the questionnaire. And sooner or later, you will get some opportunities to share the gospel with someone. So, okay, and then number seven. Next is to begin Bible studies in homes with people who are interested. The churches that we have worked at starting have, almost all of them except one, have been in our home. And the one that wasn't in our home, we were invited there by a toothless, blind old grandma and her son that was not real alert. But they both wanted to have a little church service in their little shack. It was hotter than an oven in that shack on a Managua summer day. Oof, it was so hot. But you know, that's how the church got started in that community. And so you take the gospel to people as you can in homes, in your own or in others. Number eight, develop home Bible studies into small groups, working through the FRAN networks of the interested persons receiving the Bible studies. FRAN stands for the person's friends, the person's relatives, the person's acquaintances, or that person's neighbors. And so as you find someone who has interest, you are alert not only to that person, but to their networks of relationships. And the more you can include their friends, relatives, neighbors, acquaintances, buddies into Bible discussion and prayer, the more they will reinforce each other and encourage each other rather than oppose one another. Number nine, continue door-to-door visitation and getting to know people. Have a regular, specific time for visitation. Choose appropriate literature and an attractive brochure about your church. Don't depend on literature to do the saving of people for you. What literature is good for is primarily spreading the vision and giving people an acquaintance of your presence and planting gospel seeds. But typically, people don't come to Christ through reading a tract. Now, there are exceptions. Usually, it's one-to-one, person-to-person, sharing the gospel, asking for a decision. That's why it's called personal soul winning or personal witnessing. Remember this, the more personal it is, the more impactful it becomes, the more powerful it becomes. Personal soul winning. Hand out the literature, but don't depend on that to do the work for you. It's good as a tool, but it's not good to do everything for you. And then I would suggest that as a church planting team, that you together set a time when you all will gather together and then you will go out witnessing. We need that accountability to help us do it, to actually get it done. Then come back afterwards, have a debriefing. How did it go? What did we learn? And pray over the people that you have met with. Now, that shouldn't be the only time that you witness, but to have regular scheduled times as a church planting core group will help you to continue to do it on a regular basis. Number 10, during the acquaintance and initial cell building or small group building stages, keep looking for a temporary meeting place to rent when the small groups outgrow the available living rooms. I would say don't worry about trying to find a church building first. Try to find the people first. Because you don't know for sure where the receptive people are going to end up being. If it's a small city, they could end up being on the other side of the city. And if you have a building on this side, then you're trying to get people to commute. Church growth people in this country say that normally people will be willing to travel about 10 to 15 minutes by whatever is their preferred means. If they don't have cars and they just walk, then it'll be 10 to 15-minute walk. If it's bus, 10 to 15-minute bus ride. If it's car, 10 to 15-minute drive. There are exceptions, of course, and I suppose when you get out into Montana and Wyoming, that is going to have to change. But typically here in the East, it's that way. So don't be too quick to get a building, even if it's cheap. We are known for liking things that are cheap. If it's cheap, I'll even take two of them, right? Just hold off on that. Get a few people first, and then together make the decision about a building. And just because it's cheap to get doesn't mean it will be cheap to keep. All right, and then number 11, when you have several small groups, plan to call them together for your first public worship service, most likely at a significant season of the year. An example of when not to do it is to have your first public gathering during the summer when people are going away for camping and so on and reunions. But like when school starts, just after school starts, or at Christmas or New Year's, those are great times to start, or resurrection, because people know that they should be going to church if they have any kind of Christian memory, and that can help work in your favor. Number 12, follow up your visitors to worship services. And this is something, to my regret, that we did not actively work at under my watch in our church plan. So if people actually got up in time and got cleaned up and made the sacrifice to come to your church and risk putting themselves in a church environment, something's going on in their hearts. Now, if they're fellow Mennonites from another state, don't worry about following up on them. It's just enough to tell them thank you when they're at the building. Say, thank you so much for coming to visit us. But if they're local people, give them your contact information. Give yours first, right? Here's my name and number. And if we can ever serve you, please let us know. Thank you so much for coming to visit us. If I'd ever like to get in touch with you or let you know of a special event, how could I get in touch with you? And then you get their name, their phone number, their address, and then I would really encourage you that following week, within 1 week, go and make a personal visit. Take a loaf of bread or take a batch of cookies or something, any kind of gift. Maybe take one of Jolene's candles for being a starter log or something like that, right? Any kind of thing that would be a gift. Just say, we're here. We want to say thank you for coming to visit us. How can we pray for you? Do you have a church that you go to every Sunday? The most important word in that sentence is the word every. And if they say, well, we go sometime, but not every. Well, now you do. You are very welcome at our place, at our church. How can we pray for you today? And so follow up on your visitors too. And by the way, if you have ushers or greeters, don't choose people that are not good for anything else in church. Choose people who are friendly, who are good with people. People who can make others feel welcome and at home. People who study churches say that when people visit a church for the first time, within about 15 seconds, they've decided if they're going to come back or not. And it has lots to do with the people that meet them at the door. Now, Christians from Christian background are going to be evaluating the worship style or the doctrine of the church or the skill of the preacher. But unchurched people, they don't know about that. They have their antenna out for relationship vibes. Do these people like each other? Do they like me? Do I feel comfortable here? And so those people at the door who are welcoming people are very important. Very important. Choose them and orient them for being greeters and ushers. Number 13, make use of local people as much as possible in every aspect of church life. Number 14, organize the membership and begin preparing leaders. And this would be another topic, how you go about that. Number 15, when you get to that stage, let me know and I'll give you some ideas, okay? And then number 15, resolve the building needs with the emerging group, not for them. So you as a sending church, don't dump a bunch of money on them so that they can go and buy their own building. They need to struggle with this and wrestle with it and use their own resources as much as they can, and then you can come alongside and help, but don't do it for them. You as a church planning team, don't decide it for them and call back to Wellsprings and say, could you help us buy this building? Work together with those who are visiting, attending, and becoming part of the church to try to resolve that. That's not to say that Wellspring can't help you with a very generous offering sometime. All right. Now, number 16, throughout the process, continue with regular times for fasting and prayer. You need it all the time. Now, every church plant is going to go through some thresholds. Like when you go into a house, there's a threshold there. If you don't pick up your feet, you're going to stumble over it. Pick up your feet to go over the threshold. What are the thresholds that you will cross, need to cross as a church planting team? First, how to make initial contacts in the target community. That means you have to overcome your own fear and inertia. Inertia is another fancy word for laziness, right? That you'd rather do anything else but this. And so how do you get to meet people in this new neighborhood, this new home of yours? And you have to meet people. And I would suggest that you set a goal for the amount of time, the days, and the times that you are specifically going to work at this. Of course, you'll do it through your work and your shopping and everything. But you need to have more than that. You need to have intentional times where you are going out and about where people gather to meet people. So that with the intention of befriending them and sharing the gospel with them. Number two. The second threshold is how to engage these contacts in a serious consideration of the faith. So you begin to make relationships. Like Linford said, they just met a man across the street. They had been saying, going like this to each other. But finally, of late, they begin to have conversation. Now, the next threshold then is how to get from there to discussing spiritual topics in a way that that person gives serious consideration to it. And so here, we're looking at the possibility of home Bible studies or Bible discussion groups, small groups, and in special events where they come and hear the gospel, or, and even more preferable, is to share a personal, the gospel with them one-to-one with an invitation to receive Christ. Number three, the next threshold is those who are reading the Bible or who have made an initial profession of faith in Christ, how to encourage a firm and public commitment to Christ, a public commitment to Christ. Here we're talking about baptism, coming to baptism and membership in the local church and giving their own testimony to other people within their networks. These are public commitments to Christ. And so if you have people who are in Bible study groups, but they never get to the point of baptism or membership, then you still are not getting them into getting a church planted. Or if they do not begin sharing their faith with other people, then you as a church plant team, your growth is limited to what you can do as a team. What you need is to equip these new believers even before they're baptized, to share the gospel with their friends. Encourage them to do it, even though they don't have all their theological I's dotted and T's crossed. Remember that man out of whom Jesus cast the demons, and he wanted to follow Jesus. And Jesus said, no, you stay here, and you go and tell all your people how much God has done for you. That can happen. Or the man that was blind, and then Jesus healed him, and the Pharisees were criticizing him left and right. And he said, well, all I know is once I was blind and now I can see. Oh, so they said, so are you this man's disciple? He says, I don't know if he's a sinner or not. I just know that now I can see. Do you want to be his disciples too? So, you know, people that don't know very much, like, for example, this Tony I told you that's drunk most of the time, you know, and so bless his poor heart. I mean, he can hardly walk straight many times down our sidewalk. But then here he was this week, at the store where they hang out and drink, and he tried to get his buddies there to come and see the Jesus film and have a meal together. He said, I tried to get them all to come, and they wouldn't come. I don't know what's wrong with him. It made me so mad. So here he was, this guy trying already in his poor, feeble way to help other people get acquainted with something good. And then number four, the fourth threshold is when and how to begin corporate worship. So as a church planting team, if you use the start from scratch model, I would just hold off on starting public worship services right from the beginning. I know it'll feel strange to you. I know you'll feel a little bit guilty, but you can meet together as a team for worship and prayer and nurturing each other. But then a great time to go witnessing would be while other people are in church. Because you're looking for the ones that aren't in your church anyway. That's a great time to show up, right? Because you know right then already without asking, do you go to church every Sunday? You know the answer to that, right? And so try doing that until you get some people. Then you ask the Lord, when is a good time to begin to start corporate worship? I wouldn't start it in the middle of summer. I would wait till the beginning of the school year or maybe over some special event like Holy Week or Christmas or something like that. And then number five, how to identify and train new leaders is another threshold. How do you work toward discipling new believers? And those you are discipling, how do you move them toward accepting leadership in this group for facets of its ministry? And how do you discover who are the ones that God is calling out to be leaders of the group? That's another threshold. And then one more that I add, which was not in this original source, is how and when to dismantle the scaffolding. And what I mean by that is, when does the church planting team discontinue and be redeployed elsewhere, or when does it become subsumed into the church itself and no longer have a separate existence? So that's something that needs to be talked about at some time. So the church planting team, the core group that goes to plant a church, actually is like the scaffolding around a building. As the building goes up, then the scaffolding begins to come down because you don't need it anymore. So as the new church begins to develop, this church planting team begins to cut back on the kinds of decisions it makes. It needs to decide which are the things that need to be decided by this team because it relates to this team, which are the things that should be decided by this new church, and take responsibility for their own church life. Now, just very briefly here, the four stages in church planting. At first, it's the church in mission. We call it paternalism. Paternalism, like a father and a child, or a mother and a daughter. So this is church in mission. The church is sending out the church planters and giving oversight and so on, paternalism. Second, you have the mission church, where the church is beginning to develop, and it's called partnership. And so the mother church and the daughter church relate together as a mother-daughter church. But then, number three, the independent church, it's parallelism, where the new church has its own autonomy, its own life, it governs itself, it supports itself. It is a sister, not a daughter church. It is a sister church along with the church that sent out the church planting team. And then finally, it becomes a missionary church. And here we have propagation, where this new church then itself begins to start new churches, send out church work planters and missionaries and so forth. All right, I'll try, and I will stop there. Brother Dean, if you'll come and have the closing exercises.